From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today, an update of things that are going on at the United Nations. First, from the spokesperson for the Secretary General, and then from the spokesperson for the President of the General Assembly. This is Stefan Dujarric, who is the spokesperson for the Secretary General of the UN.
All right. Good afternoon. Geir Pedersen started his duties today as Special Envoy for Syria, based in Geneva, as you know. In a tweet, he said that he was honored to assume his duties in service of the Syrian people and their aspirations for peace. He added that he looks forward to consulting broadly within and outside of Syria. As you know, Mr. Pedersen succeeds Staffan de Mistura. We've all greatly appreciated Mr. de Mistura's tireless efforts on behalf of the Syrian people. As a mediator, Mr. de Mistura demonstrated many times his ability to bring together the international community as he tried to bring peace to the country. Meanwhile, we strongly condemn the abduction and killing of a humanitarian aid worker in Syria, Mark Cutts, the deputy humanitarian coordinator for the country. Said today that he was appalled and outraged by the news of the abduction and killing of an aid worker representing a non-governmental organization last week in Idlib and in the northwest part of the country. Parties to the conflict have an obligation not only to protect their lives, but also to ensure that aid workers can work unhindered. And On Yemen, just to give you a logistical update, Martin Griffiths, the special envoy, is in Riyadh today, and he expects to meet President Hadi of Yemen tomorrow. And over the weekend, he was in Yemen, where he met with the Ansarallah leadership as well as with UN officials. And on the Central African Republic, our humanitarian colleagues said they were shocked and saddened by the killings of a humanitarian worker in Batafango in Ouham Prefecture on Saturday. A guard of a non-governmental organization succumbed to injuries following a shooting during a violent break-in at his organization premises. The Central African Republic is one of the most dangerous places for humanitarian aid workers, according to the Office of the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. Some 396 incidents directly affecting humanitarian personnel and assets. That's more than one incident per day were recorded in 2018, and that was a 17.5% increase compared to to 2017. He also, and also on the Central African Republic, the government and the humanitarian country team, the UN's humanitarian country team, have today launched the 2019 Humanitarian Response Plan, which requests $437.7 million to assist 1.7 million extremely vulnerable people. The number of people in need of assistance and protection has increased from 2.5 million to 2.9 million, a 16% rise compared to 2018. Of these people, 1.9 million people require immediate assistance. More information online. And just to flag that over the weekend, we issued a statement on Burkina Faso in which the Secretary General said he was concerned over the deteriorating security situation in some parts of the country where the authorities declared a state of emergency. He's also concerned about intercommunal violence. And in Vienna, the UN Office on Drugs and Crime released a report that says the number of human trafficking victims is on the rise and calls on countries to strengthen their cooperation to protect victims and bring criminals to justice. The report found a clear increase in the number of children being trafficked and who now account for 30% of all detected victims, with far more girls detected than boys. Sexual exploitation continues to be the main purpose of trafficking, accounting for some 59%. The report draws on information from 142 countries and examines trafficking trends and patterns while focusing on human trafficking in armed conflict. More information on the UN Office of Drugs and Crimes website. And at 4:35 p.m. This afternoon, Sandra Erika Yovel Polanco, the Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Republic of Guatemala, will be here in this room to brief you on her meeting with the Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres. I pause and take questions.
Thank you, Stefan, and Happy New Year. There was reports yesterday about a young Saudi woman that was not allowed to enter Thailand and her passport confiscated by Saudi officials in Bangkok. And she was denied at the beginning access to UNHCR office to seek refuge. As far as I understand from the last hour that UNHCR in Bangkok got in contact with her. My question is, and this is to the Secretary General, does he have any position one way or the other on a universal rights ground about the guardianship laws in Saudi Arabia and its impact on the rights of female Saudi?
On this particular case, UNHCR is involved, and as far as I understand, from what we've been told, they're in touch with the young lady in person as a matter of principle for the world over. The Secretary General believes in equal treatment of men and women under the law. Mr. Bays, you may, but later on, 2020 maybe.
You just told us that the Foreign Minister of Guatemala is going to be here to give the readout of the meeting with the Secretary General. Can we ask what the Secretary General is likely to tell the Foreign Minister, particularly given this row over the corruption body, the UN-backed corruption body, and now one member of that body being held?
Well, you know, the meeting was requested by the Foreign Minister of Guatemala. So before I know what the Secretary General will say to the Foreign Minister, we obviously have to hear what the Foreign Minister has to say since she requested the meeting. As you know, the Secretary General has and continues to support the work of the Commission and expects the Guatemalan government to provide the Commission with all the assistance necessary for the discharge of its functions and activities, including the freedom of movement of its staff and throughout Guatemala, as provided in the agreement that was signed. Señor.
I also have a follow-up on Guatemala. There is a growing concern that after the incident over the weekend, other investigators with the Commission who are still outside of Guatemala could go through the same that this investigator went through over the weekend. So I wonder if the SG shares that concern about what could happen to these other investigators who are outside of the country.
I'm not going to predict what will happen. We're obviously happy that Yelena Osorio was allowed back into the country, and we expect the Guatemalan government to allow all the staff of the Commission freedom of movement, whether it is coming back into Guatemala or whether it is traveling throughout the country. I'm begging for questions here. I should have left, I sense. Go ahead,
I can provide.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Stefan. I'm getting reports in from Hodeida, from humanitarians there, of large numbers of civilians returning to the city. Apparently it's too cold in the hills around and they want to get back to their homes. Also, they feel that the ceasefire deal in Hodeida is holding. But there are concerns because there isn't actually peace in the city yet and they could be returning to a dangerous situation. Question, do you have any confirmation of these reports? Any idea of the number of peoples? And
no, I mean, we had in the past few days, if I recall, report on some movement of people back into Yemen. We very much hope that all the parties involved will respect the agreement. And obviously, Mr. Griffiths, his stay in Yemen, and now his trip to Saudi Arabia, where he meet with President Hadi, is a big part of reinforcing the work that was done in Stockholm.
I'm sorry, at the beginning there you said movement of people back into Yemen, but did you mean
back into Hodeida? Yes, I did. Thank you for listening. James.
Yeah, just a follow-up on Yemen. Do we have any guidance now on when the special envoy hopes to convene the second round of talks? We were told it was going to be this month at some point, and we know that those are not going to be convened in Stockholm again. Some suggestions, maybe Kuwait or Jordan. Could you give us any?
No, I think Mr. Griffiths is neck deep, as one would say, into these things, and we will let him announce when he feels the time is right on the next steps for face-to-face discussions.
Thank you. I just wanted to see whether you had any thoughts to share with us on the ongoing election process in the DRC. As you know, there were some results expected over the weekend that were not forthcoming.
I always have thoughts to share on many things, but I'll skip the personal thoughts. We've obviously seen the decision taken by the Independent Electoral Commission to delay the announcement of the provisional results of the presidential elections. As you know, those were expected on Sunday. We look forward to the timely publication of the provisional results by the commission. And I think it bears reminding that all stakeholders in this process have a responsibility to respect the laws and regulations governing the electoral process, help maintain an environment free of violence so as to enable the peaceful conclusion of the presidential, national, and provincial legislative elections in a manner that reflects the will of the Congolese people. Carol, I will come back to you.
Stefan, there were reports of an attempted coup in Gabon this morning, and I was wondering if the Secretary General had reached out to anyone, if the UN was doing anything.
Yes, the Secretary General and others have been fully briefed. His special representative for Central Africa, François Lonsenifal, is monitoring the events closely, and he stands ready to provide good offices if and as required. Of course, as a principle, the Secretary General has always stood against unconstitutional changes of power, especially by force, and in that light, he condemns the attempted coup that took place this morning in Gabon. And the Secretary General does take note that Calm appears to have returned to Libreville and calls on all actors to follow the constitutional means. Yeah, go ahead, Carol, then we'll come back.
Sorry, I was on another.
Oh, okay.
Also reports on Myanmar that the army has launched a new operation in Rakhine.
We've seen the press reports. We're trying to get a bit more information from our end. Yes.
Michelle Bachelet, the UN High Representative for Human Rights, said a couple of days that the trials in Saudi Arabia with the accused of assassinating Jamal Khashoggi falls short of international standards, and she's calling that an international probe must be taking place. Did the Secretary General receive any formal request from Turkey or any other party to conclude that? And is there any intention to activate Article 99 and bring it to the attention of the Security Council, since there was a violation of the Vienna Convention?
There's been no official request and nothing further to add on that.
Last question. When the Secretary General is going to have his press conference, the New Year press conference? That's the easy one.
Yeah, it's. I'm trying to picture the calendar in my head. I think somewhere between the 16th and the 18th of January.
Thank you.
In this very room. Monica, welcome.
That was Stefan Dujarric, the spokesperson for UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, speaking at the United Nations in New York on Monday. This is the spokesperson for the President of the UN General Assembly, Monica Grayley, at her press conference also on Monday at the UN in New York.
Thank you very much, Steph, and Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year, actually, to all of you here. It's nice to see you again for this new year. So, good afternoon. I just wanted to say that we had my colleague, Mark Seddon, who is sitting in the back there, we had a meeting with the PGA, and I would like to convey on her behalf her thank you to all of you for the cooperation last year. So she's looking forward to a strong cooperation this year, working a relationship with you. As you know, she said before repeatedly that the role of the media is a very important one, a very crucial one in her agenda. And then, again, thank you very much for all your work excellent work last year, and we look forward to continuing this work with you this year. And by the way, a very busy year. As I said before, I'm going to start with an informal plenary meeting that the PGA will convene on to brief, actually, member states. This is going to happen on the 15th of January at 3 p.m. at the Trusteeship Council Chamber. So this is an informal meeting where she will discuss, of course, her agenda for the coming months. And also, on another event for these coming months, the PGA will preside over a high-level debate on international migration and development on the 27th of February 2019 in the ECOSOC Chamber. This meeting is mandated by the GA, as you may have heard, and we will be organized under the auspices of the president of the GA in lieu of the 2019 high-level dialogue. The meeting will serve to inform the high-level political forum on sustainable development, which will review the goals and targets relevant to migration of the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development, taking into consideration the outcomes of other processes related to international migration and development. And the date is the 27th of February. And also, you may recall that the president has appointed the ambassadors of Spain, His Excellency Agustin Santor Maraver, and of Bangladesh, His Excellency Masood Bin Momen, as co-facilitators for the Migration Review Forum. So this, or both of them, will lead open, transparent, and inclusive consultations with member states to the term, the modalities and organizational aspects of the International Migration Review. And then this is requested actually by the Global Compact itself, and the modalities shall be finalized by 31st of July. And on the Convention of the Rights of the Child, the GA will also commemorate the 30th anniversary of the convention this year by organizing a high-level plenary meeting of the 74th session of the GA, the General Assembly, to help with consultations with member states, but also on the organization and procedural arrangements. So Ms. Maria Fernanda Espinosa, for that appointed His Excellency Mr. Georgi Velikov Panayotov, Ambassador of Bulgaria, and also Her Excellency Maliha Lodi, who is the Ambassador of Pakistan to the UN. They will also co-facilitate an open and transparent consultative process with member states to finalize the modalities resolution for this high-level plenary meeting. And today, on the PGA's agenda, President Espinosa will have a bilateral meeting this afternoon with the ambassador of Belgium. She will also grant two interviews, one to the Washington Times and also later Bloomberg TV. And this is also everything that we have here from us today. Do you have any questions? Go ahead.
Thank you, Monica, and welcome back. Again, on the Saudi woman in Thailand, my question, does the PGA, who have been a longstanding advocate for women rights, have any position on the guardianship laws in Saudi Arabia that prevents women from taking basic decisions regarding their free will? If I may put it this way.
You are absolutely spot on. Gender equality is actually the first priority of this PGA. She, as we said before, has been advocating for human rights and also for gender equality a long way before that became trendy, according to some analysts, and she's very consistent about that. On this particular issue that you are mentioning, she took notes, through the media reports that we all have seen, and also recalls that UNHCR is now in the scene there. So we are following this, this report. But thank you.
What about the guardianship laws in Saudi Arabia?
Look, the PGA, as I said before, has been very consistent on gender equality. This is number one priority of her presidency. And it's certainly an important topic for the PGA. It's first priority out of seven. And that's what we have to say about that. But thank you for your question. Yes, go ahead.
I didn't understand what you had to say about that.
Mm-hmm.
Does she condemn the guardianship laws in Saudi Arabia, given her very important priority that she makes her first priority of gender equality? Does she believe those laws are acceptable in the modern day age?
The PJ is a strong advocate for gender equality. This is her first priority. I don't have anything to say on this particular issue.
Sorry, with the greatest respect, mm-hmm. if it's such a priority, then why can't she speak out about appalling instances where gender equality is not in place, like the guardianship rules of Saudi Arabia? It seems a little mealy-mouthed to one minute say it's your key priority and then not be able to say something about one of the countries that is not applying any gender equality.
James, thank you very much for your question, also for your question on this. As I said before, on this particular issue, I don't have anything else to say apart from what I've said before. So if there is a request for the PGA to comment on this, I can get back to you. I think this is a very clear that gender equality is important, that women and men are equal, and they have their rights as human beings, and that's what we have to say on this.
Can I just have a follow-up?
Yes, of course.
As the female president of the General Assembly, is she not concerned that the women in Saudi Arabia would be notified by text messages when they are divorced? Is she concerned or not about that?
You are talking about a particular issue from laws from a particular country. And as we said before from this podium, when we were asked about legislations and decisions about particular countries, that we are not commenting on specific issues. I think it's very telling that this is the first female president from Latin America. It is very telling that she has been advocating for her priorities as number one, gender equality. But on this specific case that, as we all know, started surfacing on the media landscape yesterday, I don't have any further comments. But I acknowledge your question, and I thank you for your question. And as I said before, there is a request for a personal comment, and I will take it on board. But thank you. Welcome back, and Happy New Year. Okay, any other questions? No? Okay, so I'll see you tomorrow. And thank you very much. Thank you.
National Security Advisor John Bolton was in Israel on Sunday, and he held a press conference with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem.
Good evening. It's a real pleasure for me to welcome to the Prime Minister's residence here in Jerusalem someone who I've known and respected for well over two decades. America's National Security Advisor, John Bolton. John, your visit to Israel gives us an opportunity to do two things. First, it gives us an opportunity to thank the Trump administration for the extraordinary support you've shown Israel. The president walked away from the dangerous Iran deal and reimposed sanctions. That's number one. That's important to America, to Israel, to the world. And everybody who wants to stop Iranian aggression respects that deeply. Secondly, the president decided to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital and moved the embassy here, a historic decision, which we welcome. And we welcome, every time I see Ambassador Friedman here, I said, well, it's a short ride at least. So we welcome him along with your entire delegation. Third, you've unequivocally backed Israel at the United Nations, and that's something that, again, is deeply appreciated by all Israelis and all friends of Israel around the world. And you have backed, both in word and deed, Israel's right to defend itself, which we exercise constantly. It's important to know that we have the backing of our great friend and ally, the United States of America. Tomorrow, if weather permits, we'll go up to the Golan Heights. Again, depending on the weather, the Golan Heights is tremendously important for our security. And I think that when you're there, you'll be able to understand perfectly why we'll never leave the Golan Heights and why it's important for that all countries recognize Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights. I've discussed this with the President, and I hope I have a chance to show it directly to you tomorrow on our visit. And if we can't fly there, I'll say it again to you. I want to welcome you and your delegation to thank you once again for your extraordinary support. Welcome, friend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Prime Minister, thank you so much. It's a great pleasure to be here again in Jerusalem. Great to see you again. Jerusalem is such a fascinating city, such a historic city, and is now known among its other attributes as the home of the American Embassy to Israel, as you said. What a remarkable achievement that you and President Trump worked out to actually bring the embassy to the capital of Israel. It was one of President Trump's campaign promises, and he was determined to make it a reality and work so closely with you to achieve it. I think, in fact, Prime Minister, under your leadership with President Trump, we now have the best U.S.-Israel relationship in our history. On our side, we're certainly determined to continue that, because the leadership that's necessary in what is increasingly, I think, a very critical time for security here in the Middle East and for us around the world requires that strong bond and strong leadership that you and the President provide. We've got the continuing threat of Iran's quest for deliverable nuclear weapons, and despite getting out of the Iran nuclear deal, despite the sanctions, we have little doubt that Iran's leadership is still strategically committed to achieving deliverable nuclear weapons. The United States and Israel are strategically committed to making sure that doesn't happen. And right on your border, we have the problem of the conflict in Syria. We're going to be discussing the President's decision to withdraw, but to do so from northeast Syria in a way that makes sure that ISIS is defeated and is not able to revive itself and become a threat again, and to make sure that the defense of Israel and our other friends in the region is absolutely assured, and to take care of those who have fought with us against ISIS and other terrorist groups. You know, it's for the United States, a sovereign nation's ability to defend itself is the ultimate mark of sovereignty. And President Trump has said repeatedly that he backs Israel's right to self-defense. He says it proudly and unequivocally. And I would just say to any nation, whether in this region or not in this region, that has any doubt about America's support for Israel's self-defense, they better think about it again. So, Prime Minister, I'm really grateful for you and all of your team's time today and the discussions we've had. They've been very wide-ranging. I think helped strengthen the relationship that you and President Trump have and our two nations have. And it's just a delight to be here again.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.